Hi, and welcome to the Simon and Schuster Author Revealed podcast. We are joined today by the incredibly talented man of the moment, Neil Cross, writer of the hit BBC show Luther. Welcome, Neil.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today about Luther, The Calling, which is published on the 4th of August, to huge anticipation, not least by all of the many fans here at Simon and Schuster who have been waited with bated breath for the manuscript. The novel is a kind of prequel to the first series, isn't it? Where do we meet John Luther in the book, and at what stage in his life is he at?
Well, first of all, I should note that everybody was waiting with bated breath because I was so horribly, horribly late delivering the manuscript. So that was a very barbed compliment there.
I've even put dot, dot, dot after my notes here. We'll edit that out.
Very rarely has a book been delivered this late. It's called The Calling, partly because when I conceived the show that became Luther, it was going to be called The Calling. That was my working title for the show. And I did a lot of work on the character, working out who he was and where he came from and his relationships and where and how he became what he became. So I really wanted to tell that story in some way. And having the opportunity to write a Luther novel was very exciting, but I wanted to do something more than simply extend the television series. I wanted to broaden the world and widen the world and kind of deepen my and hopefully the reader's sort of understanding of Luther and the world that he walks through. So episode one of series one begins with what I've always described as the climax to Luther episode zero, which is him chasing what's clearly a very, very bad man through a very, very dark place. And what I wanted to do was tell the story of how Luther ended up chasing that very, very bad man through that very, very dark place. And to some extent, challenge myself. It's a story where, by definition, we know what the ending is. And I wanted to know if I could tell that story in such a way that it was still full of twists and turns and still exciting, and still full of tension and kind of unexpected reversals.
I mean, the fans are going to be gagging for this story, if I can say gagging on a podcast without it appearing rude.
Gagging's good.
Yeah. Because certainly everything that you've done in the first series, even more so for me in the second series, is that the sense of anticipation through your writing, through the production values, through the acting, is absolutely first class. That must be a real challenge then with a novel, because it's a different kind of medium, it's a different time frame. You're not writing for an hour-long episode where you have to build in all of those things. It must be a very, very different thing writing a novel with the same elements from where you've started with the TV. How does that process work? How is it different?
When I began, I didn't realise quite how different a process it would be. It's different in that a novel is a far more intimate form of communication between you and the reader than television is between you and the viewer.
Mm.
Channeling is direct. It's, you know, from the writer's lips to your ear, as it were. And that level of intimacy wasn't mediated as it is on TV through the medium of Idris Elba. It was just me and a character. And I had to somehow make the character on the page as arresting and sympathetic and charismatic as he is on screen. And one of the biggest problems is that he's that arresting and charismatic on screen because he's Idris Elba. And I somehow had to make somebody on the page evoke those feelings in the reader as Idris evokes them in the viewer. And actually that was no mean feat.
No, I can imagine.
Idris is a kind of once-in-a-lifetime screen presence. Which meant that the character, in fact, didn't come pre-packaged, as it were. That I had. He's what's the expression? Idris is like lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
It's a once in a lifetime thing. And trying to capture that and evoke it was far more of a technical writing challenge than I'd imagined.
So has this been a very different process compared to your other novels that you've written?
Mm. Absolutely. Anything that I'd learned from writing any other novels, of which there's a number now, kind of went out the window. And again, I hadn't anticipated that.
That's really interesting. Yeah. But also for a writer as well, who's to bring something new to your craft, that must be really exciting and really interesting process of... I say exciting.
Yeah.
It was delivered quite late, yeah. So also quite torturous, I imagine. Exactly, as well. Yeah.
Do you know those barriers, those things that go across your waist when you're on a roller coaster?
Yes.
So imagine that not working.
Oh, God.
When you're... That also would be exciting.
Oh, yeah.
And it was exciting in much the same way.
Yeah.
I did find myself, for a lot of the process, thinking, what the hell am I doing? And how the hell am I going to do this? And, you know, is this going to work? There was nothing easy. It would have been far easier just to not to use this character and not to tell this story. And I was determined that it should be a proper novel and not a kind of spin-off in any way, shape or form. It should be a book which could be read and enjoyed by anybody who'd never seen the television show. I didn't want it to rely on the television show at all.
No.
And it was enormously problematic. But the solutions, in retrospect, all look obvious. But I think the best solutions all do. The first 100 pages, I liked the story. And clearly I liked the characters. But it felt very, very lifeless. And I couldn't work out where the energy had gone, because God knows I'd expended enough energy writing it. And lots of stuff happened, and lots of blood was spilled, and you know, there was sex and there was violence, but it felt lifeless on the page to me, and I could not work out why. And I realised that I'd written it in the past tense, like I normally write my novels.
Ah.
Luther went to the shops. you know, and I realised that by doing that, when I write the scripts are written in the present tense.
Yeah.
So Luther to me is a present tense character. So I spent a week, it felt like a week, it's probably about an hour and a half. I spent a while converting the first few chapters to the present tense to see if it would work. And suddenly it came alive.
Excellent.
And I realised that a Luther story needs a sense of imminence and urgency.
Because of the tension. Yeah.
So it needs to be, and if you're telling a story in the past tense, you know that somehow the story did end. But if you tell it in the present tense, you are in the middle of the story as it unfolds.
Absolutely.
And really, as I say, it sounds like a very, very simple solution, but it took me a long time to get to it.
Very torturous.
Yeah, it's very torturous.
Much like some episodes from the first season. Yeah. We've asked a number of our fans on Facebook and also around the office to ask you a few questions. So I have, it may not be a quick fire round, but here is a question from Amy Richardson. What did Alice whisper to Luther at the end of episode 2, series 2?
One day we will find out.
Oh, God! Question from Books in the City. Mm. Idris was recently quoted as channeling Columbo when playing Luther. Did you ever imagine anyone other than Idris playing that role?
Absolutely. It wasn't written for Idris. And we knew that we wanted someone really, really good for the role. And we knew that we wanted the show to be as good as we could humanly make it. But we also knew that every British production there was desperately, desperately wanted Idris Elba to play, you know, play the lead role, and he turned down everything, to the extent that when the BBC discussed him as a possibility with me, I said, you know, absolutely, you know, I'd cut off any limb of your choosing to cast Idris Elba, but I didn't believe that it was at all possible. And they actually approached him without telling me, because they knew how nervous I would be if I knew that he'd been sent the script.
Yeah.
So the first I knew about the official approach was when they said Idris wants to do it, which was quite a strange day.
Yeah.
You know. So I kind of went for a little
Did
bit.
Did you go a bit giddy?
Giddiness was involved.
Because when we found out that he was playing in the office, we all went a bit giddy.
It was a bit mad. And it was one of those, because I work at home and I spend most of my days by myself. And my wife was at work and my kids were at school. And I got the phone call and I put the phone down afterwards. And it's one of those moments where you think, well, what do I do now?
who do I tell?
Yeah, who do I tell? And you kind of, you know.
Particularly as you live in New Zealand, so your family are on the other side of the world.
Absolutely,
in a completely
yeah.
different time zone.
So I basically spent 3 hours walking up and down my living room going, Idris Elba, Idris Elba, Idris Elba, to make it work its way into my brain.
Excellent. A question from Kelly Webster. Did the casting of Idris Elba influence your writing of Luther's character going forward?
No, is the truth. And yes is also the truth, in that any time, any role on screen is a kind of dialogue between an actor and a character. And you always ultimately tailor any role to an actor's particular attributes. So all of the cast, you know, you slightly change your style as they kind of grow into their roles. But the thing about casting Idris as Luther is that he came in, he understood the role, he liked the role, and he inhabited the role. And it things like little things, which other actors might have had problems with, like Luther driving a terrible car, Idris completely understands. So one of the great joys of having Idris play this role is that he is the role.
Yeah.
I didn't have to tailor it particularly, just because he's a joy in that role.
He is indeed. A question from Julia Marshall. You might not be able to answer this, actually. Why were there only 4 episodes of this series, not nearly enough for my liking? And when will the next series be?
Always leave them wanting more.
That's very true. It worked for 40 Towers. Sorry, I made you spit your tea out then. Apologies.
That's really funny, because one of the little-known secrets of John Luther is that Basil Fawlty is one of his heroes. It's true.
We'll have to get that in the paperback. 10 things you didn't know about Luther.
In episode 2 of series 1, when he goes into Zoe's office, he actually says, "Rouse, rouse," and that's him quoting Basil.
That passed me.
Everybody. That's between me and Idris.
That's beautiful.
Only Idris and
that's
I know
a
that.
And now all of the millions of people in the podcast.
He also, the other attribute that I share with John Luther, I don't share many attributes with him. I'm the better looking of the two of us.
I didn't mean to laugh. No, it's just been...
Why is that funny?
It shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's a plain statement of fact.
Absolutely.
Obvious to all in the room. We're being watched by 20 or 30 people right now. One of the few attributes, other than, you know, extraordinary handsomeness that I share with John Luther, is that we both watch the Shopping Channel to relax.
And John Luther has very short hair as well.
He does have very short hair.
Not
he
an
does.
Issue with baldness.
Yeah, you didn't mention the baldness. You nearly got away with that. Yeah. I have short hair by choice.
Very
obviously.
Short hair.
Yeah. Absent.
I have a question, actually. Mm-hmm. And you've touched upon Luther's car. My question that I could never quite get my head around in this second series, Luther's flat. A squat. Really?
This is another thing which, again, I describe when I'm talking to Idris about the character, I will describe it as that he and I have got joint custody. And
I like that a lot.
And the production crew, the producer and the executive producer and a lot of the production crew had an issue with the shithole that I wanted him to live in. And I described it in great terms, in the script. I went to some detail as to what degree of a shithole it truly was. And again, I got away with it because Idris understood completely why he had to live. And series 2 begins with him playing Russian roulette with his dad's gun.
Yeah.
And he's lost everything and he doesn't care about anything. So really his flat is a sort of extension of his car. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
And it's just a kind of visual metaphor of the degree to which he
But he does care, though, doesn't he?
He so does, doesn't
and,
he?
And when he grows a little more in terms of who he cares for, he might get some soft furnishings. A nice cushion, a throw.
He's not living in that flat anymore.
Right. Okay. Excellent. A question from Maxine Hitchcock. Is there anything that genuinely scares you?
A lot of people, upon meeting me, after they get over my resemblance to Idris...
Again, didn't mean to laugh.
Yes, I don't know why this is funny. Many people who meet me... In fact, the first journalists who ever interviewed me, after my first and very violent first novel had been published, we met in a pub, and it's my first ever press interview. And after we'd been talking, it was for the face of some kind of trendy magazine... And after we've been talking for about 10 or 15 minutes, she told me that her boyfriend was in the corner of the pub and that he'd come along to chaperone her. because people naturally assume that I'm a psychopath. And the fact is that if I am able to frighten other people or horrify other people, which I consider to be a kind of privilege, it's only because I write about what I'm scared other people might do to me, not about what I want to do to other people.
I've got to say, from my perspective, I heard that the scene where, in the second part of the second series, when he goes into the office with the hammer, was meant to be set at a publishing house. And it I said, we were in the pod, I said, absolutely no way whatsoever. Everyone was too smartly dressed. And the assailant would have been tripped up by a box of proofs or something.
Exactly,
on the,
yeah.
It was far too clean. But the thought that that could actually happen, absolutely petrifying. And to, you know, I go to Liverpool Street to get home, and to see him there taking out the hammer and the dice, and I just think someone could absolutely go ballistic at Liverpool Street. It's all completely conceivable.
They could.
And so petrifying.
And I think, you know, real horror and real fear isn't about ghosts and demons, or even the end of the world. The ghosts and demons are actually just ways to articulate our smaller fears. And our fears actually are about harm to a loss of a loved one.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, the invasion of our home. You know, and I think actually if there is a secret to frightening people, it's finding something small enough and representative enough of their real life. And, you know, something as innocuous as a motorcycle courier bringing anarchy and horror to your everyday working life. And if I can find this moment, there's the story that became Luther the series. The inspiration for it was me being in an unfamiliar part of London very late at night one night, trying to get home, having possibly had one drink too many. And that fear, when you're in an unfamiliar territory and you're scared of taking a wrong turning in case you end up somewhere you shouldn't be, and just those black, empty streets and insufficient light, and then a taxi turned into the road and it had its amber light on, and I immediately had a sense of security and safety. As soon as you see that taxi, you know that you're going to be home via the quickest possible route, as soon as possible, by a trustworthy man. And I thought, well, what if that's not really a taxi driver? And it's those moments, I think, that you find the greatest fear and anxiety.
London is very much a character in this series, as any of the other characters. I remember you doing a Facebook shout-out asking your friends for suggestions for the locations. Did any make the final cut? I saw that mine didn't. I have an issue.
I'm terribly sorry. Which one was yours?
Mine was the Mayfair? Not the Mayfair. Oh, it was a social club in...
Oh, that's right. It's going to get...
Series 3?
No, it's going to be second book, I think. There's that one I didn't get to use. And also one is a cafe on top of a car park somewhere.
Ah.
Which I thought was brilliant.
Excellent.
London is... I think one of the problems with writing about London is you have a tendency to write about your London. And that comes very naturally to me. And I was aware that when we signed the contract to write the Luther book, my agent said to me, so it's going to be set in North London, is it? You're going to see... And I thought, oh, my God. When I write about London, I keep bringing back... And it was true. I bring back the same kind of areas.
I was going to say, write about what you know. Mm. And at the moment, you know New Zealand.
Yeah.
It's one of the most beautiful, safest countries
in the world.
On Earth.
Yeah. There is no crime in New Zealand.
It's like Midsummer Murders there, no? Or you literally draw on what your London was you lived here.
It's like Midsummer Murders without the murders. It's like Midsummer.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
As dull as Toronto.
Yeah, no, oh God, no, nothing's as dull as Toronto. and I know now much more about East London than I knew when I lived in London, because we shoot a lot in East London for Luther, and it's kind of a very East London show. But again,
I swear that squat flat is overlooking Stratford in some way.
It probably is, yeah. But in the book, I wanted to broaden it still more. And I want to take in as much of London as possible. And the best way to do it is rather than, you know, going on Google Maps, and by which I'm trying to say, rather than doing any actual work, is ask people who know for good ideas. And it was really, really good. I used quite a lot of them, but I've also kept some in reserve, as you know.
Excellent.
I kept the best ones in reserve.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm going to set the whole of book two in your suggestion.
What a great idea. Yeah, yeah. On that bombshell. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. And hopefully when you have your next prime visit over here, you'll come back and tell us some more about book three.
Oh, I hope so.
Book two, rather.
No, book three, I'll have done them all by then.
I can imagine. When are we publishing and when's the delivery date? We'll leave it at that. Thanks, Neil.
Thank you.